started at a walk, warming muscles, as the light brightened and the sky blurred from rose to blue. The crisp air moved in the light wind, fluttering over her face, smelling like a winter potpourri of snow and pine.
"Did you get a chance to look at the schedule?" Bodine asked him.
"Yep. I see the farrier's coming around tomorrow, and the vet the day after. I'll make myself known to them. A new man's starting this morning, so I'll keep an eye on him, see if we were right about taking him on."
"Next week's Thanksgiving."
"I heard that."
"We get a lot of groups and families over that long weekend. I thought we might try out that little show, if you're agreeable. Nothing we'd advertise off-site, just a little bonus for people already here."
"I guess we can see how it goes."
"I'll schedule it."
They rode down an incline, across a narrow ravine, and up again where a herd of deer slipped silent as spirits through the woods. The tops of the lodge poles whooshed in the wind.
"Time to stretch those legs."
Bodine nudged Leo into a gallop. Cold slapped her cheeks as Leo's hooves rang over the road. He kept his ears up, his head high, showing her he enjoyed the ride as much as she. Callan rode beside her, his horse matching Leo's stride as if harnessed in tandem. When the road forked, Bodine turned right, slowing to a canter, then an easy trot. Reveling in the ride, the air, the morning, she tossed her long braid over her shoulder and decided she wanted more.
"We can take the trail up and around."
She gestured to the track through the trees marked by the Bodine Shamrock brand.
"It's a pretty winter ride, and it'll take us to another good stretch before we split off."
"Lead the way. Chase and I rode these trails now and then as boys, when your father cut him loose for a couple hours. I remember when you added those cabins we just passed."
"It's quiet enough you can forget they're there."
They wound up where the snow was piled thick and clung like white fur to branches. Off the trail, she spotted signs of deer and fox in prints and scat.
"You can just smell the smoke," she added, "from the cabins where guests are up and have a fire going, but mostly it's just air."
"Why'd you take the office instead of the horses?"
"I'm good at it."
She turned in her saddle, looking back at him.
"I'm good at horses, but there are plenty who are good with horses. I like managing all the moving parts, making sure they run smooth day after day, or making it seem like they do, even if we're scrambling where the guests don't see.
Also, I guess I like never knowing exactly what I might be dealing with on any given day, but making an agenda, clicking off the boxes so I know most of what's coming and can figure out the rest."
She turned back again as the track began its descent.
"I do miss the horses, that everyday and anytime connection. I'm going to start riding to work more than I have been."
She gave Leo a pat on the neck.
"Guests will get a kick out of seeing that. The general manager riding around sets a tone."
"Always thinking."
"Oh, I am."
Laughing, she swiveled around again as the horses stepped back onto the road.
"My mind's a busy place, Skinner. I like riding and letting it empty out for a time."
"Are you up for another gallop?"
"Sugar, I'm always up for a gallop."
"I just bet you are," she shouted, "Kya!" and sent Leo racing.
Once again, Callan and his horse matching her speed and rhythm. She was glad she'd taken the long way, the roundabout way. It meant some doubling back, but she had the time. On impulse, she took the turn away from Bodine Town. Just a few minutes more before she aimed for the office, for the workday, for the agenda. Even as she told herself it was time to stop, time to turn back, she spotted a car, stopped on the side of the road. She thought little of it, nearly didn't stop. She dropped to a trot.
"We need to... wait a minute. That looks like Billie Jean's car."
She walked her horse up to it.
"It is her car."
"Who's Billie Jean?"
"She works at the saloon. Bartender, server."
Bodine dismounted.
"She must have been working late last night. I'd have to check. It looks like she had a breakdown."
Frowning, Bodine looked through the window and felt a stab of real alarm. Her purse is on the seat.
She wouldn't just leave her purse on the seat.
Hold on.
Callan dismounted, handed Bodine the reins of both horses, and walked around the car. Bodine yanked her phone out of her jacket, scrolled through for Billie Jean's number.
Bo.
Wait, I'm calling her. Maybe she just... She trailed off, as she heard the opening riff from Michael Jackson's hit, Billie Jean's signature song. That's her ring. That's her ring, what?
The phone's on the ground over here. And it looks like somebody's trampled through this snow into the trees.
She wouldn't do that. Though Bodine could see as clearly as Callan the disturbed snow and brush. Then she saw more. Her gaze landed on the shape, the dark blue jacket, barely an instant before Callan's did the same. But Bodine leaped and ran before he could grab her.
Bo, damn it! Wait!
She's hurt! She's hurt! He caught her, dragged her back. With the snow up to their knees, they struggled until she got an arm loose enough to punch. Let go of me, you stupid son of a bitch! She's hurt! With no choice, he clamped his arms around her.
She's past hurt, Bo. Stop it. Stop it now. You can't help her.
Fury and fear spewed through her like a sickness. Get your hands off me! I swear I'll kill you! He only tightened his hold.
You can't touch her. Do you hear me? It won't do any good, and might do some harm. She's gone, Bo. She's gone.
Desperate, she fought him another few seconds, then stopped. Just stopped, with her breath tearing out, smoking away, her body quivering. I need to see. I won't touch her if... I need to see. Let me go. He eased his hold. Shifted so he was no longer blocking the body from her.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Bo.
She's
gone.
Callan's words echoed in her head, and the awful truth of them struck her heart, her guts. She hit her head on that rock. She hit her head. There's a lot of blood. She... Let go. I'm all right. Let go. When he released her, she kept her gaze on Billie Jean's face, took her phone out again. Will you call 911, Callan? Maybe her voice came out raw, but it came out steady. You do that, and I'm going to get our security to block off the road here, to block it off so nobody comes near.
Let's go back to the road and do that.
I'm not leaving her. She had to think, to take steps, to do what came next. While it was too early, thank God, for guest check-ins or check-outs, many employees used this road to get to work if they lived off property. She ordered security to block the road, both sides, for half a mile, to everyone but law enforcement. Called for a staff member to bring the keys to the closest unoccupied cabin. I don't think I should tell them why. Still knee-deep in the snow, Bodine stared at her phone. I don't think I should do that yet. I should call my parents. They need to know, but... Billie Jean's parents, they live... near Helena. No. She had to press the heel of her hand to her forehead, somehow shove the information out of her brain. Her mother lives near Helena. They're divorced. Her father? I can't remember. She has a brother somewhere. In the Navy. No, he's a Marine. When Callan said nothing, she snapped at him. It's important!
I know it is. I didn't know her, Bodine. But that doesn't mean I don't know it's important. The sheriff's on the way, and you can tell him how to contact her family.
I need to talk to them. Everything inside her felt hot and dry, just scorched. She worked for us. She was one of us. I need to talk to them, too. Somebody was chasing her. You can see where... She looked back, saw the trenches in the snow, where someone had chased Billie Jean. And where Callan had come after her to stop her. I messed that up, she murmured. I plowed right through. And I'd have grabbed onto her, moved her, if you hadn't stopped me. It's a crime scene, that's what it is. I know enough to know you're not supposed to go stomping around a crime scene.
You saw a woman lying in the snow. You saw blood. You were thinking of her, not a damn crime scene.
Thinking of her. A friend, an employee, a woman with a rollicking laugh. And not thinking at all, Bodine admitted. She couldn't allow herself to do that again. I'd have made it worse. It can always be worse, and I'd have made it worse. She had to take a long breath before she could look at him. When she did, she saw the bruise forming just under his right eye. I'm sorry I hit you. I really am.
You're not the first. I don't expect you'll be the last.
Still, she gave the bruise a light brush with her fingertip. You can put some ice on it once we... The cabin. Need to get the keys once they bring them down to Mike. Security. The police can use it if they need to. They'll need to get our statements. Maybe talk to whoever saw her last before she left the saloon. Think. Think, she ordered herself as her insides quivered. Make an agenda. Tick off the boxes. And I don't know what else. I can't seem to get my brain in order.
It's working well enough from where I'm standing.
Maybe you could walk on up, see if they got the keys to Mike yet.
You're not leaving her. I'm not leaving you, Bodine. Walking back to the road right there isn't leaving her.
She glanced back. They'd left the horses, just left the horses standing in the road. You're right. We need to secure the horses, she said, starting back. And we need to get them to the BAC. When they're done with us, the police, you could ride Sundown and lead Leo.
I'll take care of it.
Even as he gathered the reins, Callan turned toward the sound of an approaching car. He steered the horses to the far side of the road, grateful the police had responded faster than he'd hoped. He wanted, above all, to get Bodine away from there, away from standing in the snow looking at the body of a dead friend. The black truck with the county sheriff's department emblem on the side stopped a few feet short of Billie Jean's car. Callan watched the man get out. The broad-shouldered, defensive lineman's build, the cream-colored hat over short, straw-colored hair, reflective sunglasses over eyes Callan knew to be cold, hard blue. Square-jawed, thin-lipped, he turned his head enough to give Callan a 10-second stare before moving toward Bodine. Callan thought, "Fuck me," and secured the reins to a branch before crossing the road again.
"It's Billie Jean Younger," Bodine said. "She's one of our bartenders."
Garrett Clintock nodded.
"Sheriff's on the way. I'm going to need both of you to stay clear. Heard you'd come back, Skinner."
Not sheriff, at least.
"Hadn't heard you were deputy. Bodine's had them send down keys to that cabin right up there. I'm going to take her and the horses up there. You're going to wait until I say different."
He looked down at Callan's jeans, boots.
"You went right on out there. Compromised the crime scene."
"I did that," Bodine said quickly. "I saw her and I didn't think. I just tried to get to her. Callan stopped me. I'm sorry, Garrett. I just reacted."
"Understandable enough. Did you touch her?"
"Callan stopped me before I got to her. I could see. Anybody could see she was gone. But I just reacted."
"Her phone's on the ground. The other side of her car," Callan added. "We didn't touch that either, deputy."
"I really would like to get inside. Just sit down. Maybe have some water." Bodine shifted, just a little. Just enough to put herself between the men and the ugly vibrations in the air. "I'm feeling a little shaky. Do you think Callan could go down to where I have Mike blocking the road? Get the keys? We'd be right there. Big Sky Cabin. We didn't want to leave her alone, but now that you're here...
You go ahead. I don't want you talking to anybody about this yet. Not until we get a handle on things.
Thanks. Thank you, Garrett.
They crossed the road together, got the horses, began to lead them up the road.
You played him like a fiddle.
Bodine sighed. I don't care for playing the weak-kneed female, but I'd forgotten how the two of you butt heads.
I butted back. That's different.
The cold edge in his voice made her want to sigh. Maybe so, but I didn't see the sense in having a pissing match with Billie Jean lying there 20 feet away. Since I'm supposed to be weak-kneed, go on and take the horses up to Mike. Ask him to have somebody come and take them in. I'll wait on the porch in a damn rocking chair. Inside a half hour, she'd made coffee. They had a fire going, and she'd paced about 2 miles, circling the living area of the cabin. It didn't do her nerves much good when instead of the sheriff, Clintock walked in.
I know this is a hard time for you, Beau. Why don't you sit down for a bit? I'm going to take your statement in just a little while. Skinner and I are going to talk out on the porch first.
The sheriff's here. I saw the trucks out the window.
That's right. They're doing what needs to be done, just like I am. Skinner.
He jabbed a thumb at the door, stepped out again.
Don't provoke him, Bodine warned.
My breathing provokes him.
Callan walked out. Clintock leaned back against a porch post, nodded.
Let's hear your side of it. That's an interesting way to put it. We were riding to work, he began. You and Bodine? You do that a lot?
First time, but then I haven't been back long, and only started working at the resort officially as of last night.
Tipping down his sunglasses, Clintock aimed those hard eyes over them.
I heard you were working at the Bodine Ranch.
Things changed.
They fire you?
Don't provoke him, Bodine had asked. But doing so held too tempting. Knowing how to get under Clintock's skin, Callan smiled a little.
Logic says if they had, I wouldn't be working at their resort. We were riding to work, he said again. Whose idea was that?
I'd say mutual.
I was planning on it. She was planning on it. We ended up planning on it at the same time. Looks like you took a big detour. Quicker ways to get from the ranch to the resort on horseback. We wanted a ride. Who picked the route?
Bodine.
Clintock's mouth twisted into a nonverbal liar.
Uh-huh. How well did you know Billie Jean Younger?
I didn't know her. I never met her.
Is that so?
Now Clintock hooked a hand in his gun belt.
You're working at the resort, but you never once met her.
That's right.
Seeing as I just started there. Where were you last night, Skinner?
I'm living on the Bodine place, and that's where I was.
In the bunkhouse?
No. I'm in the shack.
On a long, slow nod, Clintock stepped closer, crowding Callan's space.
Alone, then?
Most of the time.
Bodine and I had a conversation and a beer last night, pertaining to me taking over for Abe Cotter while he's gone.
Rather than move back, Callan simply edged forward.
Are you seriously trying to wind what happened to that girl around to me? Does it stick that deep for you, Clintock? I know what you are, what you've always been. Did Billie Jean get a piece of you there when you went at her? She give you that eye?
I never met Billie Jean. Beau gave me a shot.
Now I wonder why she'd do that. Ask her. Be sure, I will.
With his mouth twisted in a sneer, Clintock tapped a finger on Callan's chest.
You're back here a handful of days and we've got a dead woman. You're back here a handful of days and you want me to believe you never once stepped foot into the saloon at the resort and made yourself known to the good-looking woman working the bar?
I know bullshit when I smell it, Skinner. Seems to me you're shoveling that shit so deep you'd be hard put not to catch a whiff. There's a boot scraper by the door, if you don't want to go tracking it around behind you. Quintock's face went red as boiled beets, a transition Callan knew, from past experience, generally presaged a sucker punch. Go on. Follow through with that.
Callan's invitation blew as cold and stiff as the wind. We'll see where we end up. Clintock's teeth set. Callan would have sworn he all but heard them grinding, but the deputy backed off.
You can go to work, for now. Don't make any traveling plans.
I'll leave when Bodine does.
I told you to move along.
Deliberately, Callan walked down the porch, sat in one of the rockers.
Now tell me what law I'm breaking.
Clintock's right hand closed into a fist.
It won't take me long to deal with you. That time's coming.
But he walked inside, leaving Callan sitting in the rocker.
There's coffee, Bodine said immediately.
I wouldn't say no to that.
Clintock, the red still staining his cheeks, sat at the long table in the kitchen area.
Would you know if Billie Jean was working last night, and when she'd have left?
She was working, and I can't be sure exactly when she left, but it would have been after midnight. We leave closing up to the staff, as long as they're available until midnight. It could have been as late as one. Then there's closing up. So I can only say she'd have left somewhere between 12:30 and 1:30.
She set coffee in front of him, sat herself.
I really need to tell my parents about this, Garrett, and some of the staff.
In a bit. We got our own men blocking off this area, so you can tell yours to go once I get your statement here.
All right.
Now, what were you doing riding with Skinner way over this way? Did he ask you to take the long way?
No. I wanted to give my horse a good run. I haven't had him out for over a week. That's why I left early this morning, and when I ran into Callan saddling his own horse, we rode together.
His idea?
God, I don't know, Garrett.
Weary, half sick, she shoved at her hair.
It was just the natural thing to do. We're leaving at the same time, going to the same place.
All right, but
look, she was done with the weak-kneed ploy. I know you've got a deep dislike for Callan, but that's beside the damn point here. We left the ranch together, and I decided how we'd get to the resort. I wanted a good ride. I started to head in, but I just wanted a little more, so I took this road to get another gallop in, and I saw Billie Jean's car. I didn't think that much of it, except she must have had car trouble and called somebody to come get her, but then I saw her purse still in the car, and I got worried. I called her. I took out my phone to call hers just to check, and...
Now she had to take a moment. She rose and poured a glass of water.
I heard. We heard. Her phone ring. I know her ringtone. And her phone was on the ground, lying in the snow. And then I saw. I looked over where you could see somebody'd been going off the road, walking or running through the snow, and I saw her coat. I saw her. I told you, I just reacted, and I started running, trying to get to her. And Callan grabbed me, told me to stop, that I couldn't help her.
Now, how did he know that?
Oh, God, Garrett, anyone could see!
Anger reared up, through the weary, through the sick.
I just didn't want to see, to believe, so I tried to get away. I even punched him, but he held on until I calmed down. I don't know why you're letting some idiot high school feud make you try to point fingers his way, but I can damn sure tell you, whoever did that to Billie Jean wasn't Callan Skinner.
I got a job to do.
Clintock pushed to his feet.
And unless you can tell me you know just where Callan Skinner was when this happened to Billie Jean, I'll point where I need to point. You ought to be careful of him.
You can go on into work if that's where you're going. The sheriff will come around to talk to you himself when he's done here.
When he walked out, Bodine snatched the coffee off the table, dumped it down the sink. Male dick-measuring, ball-swinging, chest-puffing bullshit! She swung around when Callan came in.
And I don't want to hear any of it out of you!
All right.
A pair of you want to ram antlers and paw the goddamn ground? There's a woman dead. A woman I hired. A woman I liked. A woman with family, friends, and...
There it is.
Callan soothed when Bodine covered her face, began to shake. He went to her, wrapped arms around her. She didn't fight him this time, stayed stiff only for a moment, then leaned in.
Let go.
She was a friend of mine. She was a friend.
I'm sorry.
He pressed a kiss to her temple, stroked a hand down her back.
I wish there was more to say, but that's all there is.
I need to do something. I'm better if I know what to do.
You need to take a minute. That's doing something, too.
Crying's just annoying. Crying doesn't do anything.
Sure it does. You empty something out so you can fill it with something else.
Maybe, but...
She turned her head just as he turned his. Their lips met. Bumped, she'd think later. Really, just bumped. Unplanned. An accident in timing and direction. Maybe they lingered together a few seconds, but it wasn't remotely an actual kiss. Still, she jerked back.
That's so disrespectful.
It wasn't meant to be.
Stuck between frustrated and embarrassed, she waved her hand in the air, swiped at her wet cheeks as she paced away.
Wasn't you. Wasn't me. Just happened. It's a horrible morning. Horrible. And it just happened. I need to get to Bodine Town. My mother should be in by now. I need to tell her about this. We need to... God, we need to figure out how to tell everyone.
She pressed her fingers to her eyes.
You need to get to the BAC. We're shorthanded enough there.
Why don't I call Chase? Tell him what happened. Seems like he and your father should come over here. You're going to want your whole family when you tell everybody.
On a long, expelled breath, she dropped her hands.
You're right. You're right. And I should have thought of that. We'll have Mike take us in.
Quintock said the police are blocking things off now. She closed her eyes a moment, drew her shoulders straight again.
Okay. I know what I have to do. Let's get going.
Chapter 7 The family gathered at Bodine House, spread out in the pretty living room with its dozens of framed photographs and its simmering fire. After insisting her mother sit, just sit, Maureen passed around the coffee. If they'd been at the ranch, Bodine thought, a family meeting would take place at the big dining room table, with her mother fussing just as she was now. Because fussing kept her calm. Bodine could relate, as doing something, most anything, did the same for her. They'd chosen the meeting site because the family needed to stay close, and Bodine calculated she couldn't spare more than a half hour away from her office. She needed to tend to her people, deal with the fallout and grief already reverberating through the resort.
What can we do for her family?
Miss Fancy sat, back erect, in her favorite chair.
I knew her. A hard-working, fun-loving girl. But, Bodine, you'd have known her best. What can we do for her family?
I'm not sure right now, Grammy. Her parents are divorced. Have been, I think, a long time. She has a brother in the Marines, and I don't know where he's stationed. I'll find out. Her mother's in Helena, as best I know. I'm just not sure about her father.
If her family comes here, we need to put them up somewhere as private as we can. Take care of them.
No question of it, Cora agreed. Bodine, you'll need to block off 2 cabins so we'll have them if needed, and choose a driver for them.
I've blocked the cabins already.
She had an agenda, tried to organize what could and should be done. For a driver, well, they might rent cars. I think one of us should be available for driving them wherever they need to go. I think we should do that, rather than one of the staff.
That's a good thought, Maureen told her. We also have to tend to our resort family.
Billie Jean. Tears swam into her eyes, so she took a moment to settle the ones that rose to her throat.
She was well-liked. Such an outgoing girl.
We need to address, and soon, the grief and the shock, and the fear, too. We don't know what happened yet, but people are going to be speculating and worrying on top of mourning one of our own.
I think we should bring in a grief counselor.
At Rory's suggestion, Chase turned his head, stared.
I don't see people wanting to talk about all this with some stranger.
You wouldn't,
Rory agreed.
And other Stoics wouldn't. But some would, more than you might think. We're a company, and as a company we should offer counseling to our employees.
I may be of Chase's mind about talking things through with some counselor,
Sam began.
But I can see Rory's point here. We should find somebody who has a good reputation for this and provide it. People can decide for themselves on it.
I'll look into it.
Doing so was already on Bodine's list.
No.
Cora shook her head at Bodine.
You're going to have enough on your plate. I can find the right person for this.
I'm not being cold or callous.
Rory scowled into his coffee.
And I'm as pissed off as I am sad. I still can't get my head around it. And I'm not sure I will even when we find out what the hell happened. But we've got to think about a press release. How we answer reporters, not to mention how we answer guests.
I'm working on it, Bodine assured him. Until we know what happened, it's best to say the truth first. We're all shocked and grieving over the loss of one of our own, and we're cooperating fully with the investigation. There's just not much else to say at this point.
I can talk to some of the staff. Nana's right,
Rory continued,
about you having so much on your plate.
He'd know what to say, Bodine thought, and he'd know when to just listen.
Rory had such heart, and the ability to read what a person needed often before that person knew themselves.
That'd be helpful.
As this goes along, Jessica and I will refine official statements and work out what everyone, not just us, but everyone, should say to guests, to reporters. You could help with that too, Rory.
Why her?
Chase asked.
Why Jessica? She's events, isn't she?
Because she's smart, and she understands perceptions. She stays calm and on message, but she knows how to adjust when circumstances change.
Bodine sat cross-legged on the floor, looked up at him and his doubtful frown.
Have you got a better pick for it?
I don't see why you'd want somebody who barely knew Billie Jean and works on parties. But it's your decision.
He moved his shoulders.
That's right.
Dad and I have to settle down the ranch hands. It doesn't make sense.
Anger eked through.
It just doesn't make any damn sense why someone would go at her that way.
We don't know that's what happened.
Bodine held up a hand before Chase could bite at her.
I think it has to be what happened, but we don't know. Until we do, you have to tell everyone at the ranch the same as we're telling everyone at the resort.
He stared at her until the hot anger in his eyes cooled.
It had to be an awful thing for you, finding her like that. I'm glad you weren't alone when you did.
Because the image of Billie Jean's body flashed into her mind, Bodine only shook her head and looked away. At a knock on the door, she rose quickly.
I've got it.
She opened the door to find Sheriff Tate dutifully wiping his boots on the mat.
Bodine. How are you doing, honey?
Bob Tate had a robust build and a weathered, ruddy face. She'd known him all of her life. As he was friendly with her parents and liked to tease, he'd kissed her mother once before her father got up the gumption. It's a terrible day. A hard, terrible day.
I know it.
He gave her a quick hug, then a pat on the back.
I stopped in over at the office, and that pretty blonde from out east said you and your family were all over here. I'm going to need to talk to you, honey.
I know. Let me take your coat.
Don't you worry about it.
He stepped into the living room.
Miss Fancy, Mrs. Bodine,
he took off his hat.
I'm sorry to have to come into your home like this.
You're always welcome here, Bob.
Cora rose first.
I'll get you some coffee.
I'd sure be grateful for it. Maureen, Sam, boys.
Rory, get Sheriff Tate a chair.
Miss Fancy gestured toward her daughter's bedroom.
How's Lolly doing?
She's got me on a diet.
He smiled as he said it, eyes crinkling.
A man could starve to death in his own house. Thank you, Rory.
He sat in the chair Rory carried out, puffed out a breath.
What can you tell us?
Sam asked.
The fact is, I can't tell you much right now. We're doing all we need to do, and I can't speak frankly on that. I need to ask Bodine some questions.
Cora stopped on her way back from the kitchen, coffee cup in hand.
Do you need us to leave?
No, ma'am. No. There's no need. It could be, as you all knew, Billie Jean, you may have something to say that might add to the picture. But, Bodine, you're the one who found her, along with Cal Skinner.
Yes, sir. We were riding to work together. Horseback, she qualified, though of course he knew.
You took a roundabout way. Cal suggested that?
No, I did. I had the lead. He lifted his eyebrows, but nodded. She gave him the details, as she had to Garrett Clintock. Tate stopped her when she got to Billie Jean's phone. Nodding, Tate flipped through a little notebook.
Cal suggested you try to call her.
No. When I saw her purse was in the car, I got worried, so I called her cell. She doesn't have a landline. And I heard her ringtone. About the same time, Cal said for me to come around the car and look. And we saw her phone on the ground. And that torn-up path through the snow. Then I saw her, and I tried to run over to where she was lying in the snow. I thought she was hurt. I tried to tell myself that, but the truth was I could see. Anybody could see. It was too late. Callan stopped me, held me back. Watching her, Tate tapped a stubby pencil against his notebook.
Did he go up to her?
No. He held on to me, got me calmed down enough till he could make me understand. I just didn't want to understand. That we weren't supposed to touch her or anything.
I'm told Cal has a black eye. Did he have that this morning when you started out for work?
No. Because I gave it to him. I was half crazy, fighting to get loose, and I landed one on him before I got a hold of myself. And I see what's happening here. She spoke coldly now. And I've got something to say.
You go ahead.
I told Garrett as clearly as I'm telling you what happened and how. If he told you differently, he's lying. As if to tamp things down, Tate tapped a hand in the air.
Well, Bo, I'm aware there's some bad blood between Cal and Garrett. Clintock poisoned it a long time ago.
Chase got to his feet, slow and easy.
It got poisoned when we were no more than kids, and Clintock dogged Cal, hounded him. He was goddamn relentless. Sorry, Grammy, but that's the word for it.
He poisoned it when he and three of his asshole friends, when he paused again, Miss Fancy waved a hand.
Wait until you're done to apologize for your language in the parlor.
It's what they were, a as they were jumping us when Cal and I were camping down at the river. The three of them holding me down so Garrett could pound on Cal. But it ended up with Cal pounding on him and getting the better of him before Wayne Rickett. You remember him?
I do, Tate said. Seeing as back when I was deputy, I hauled him into a cell more than once. And as sheriff, I had a part in putting him away for 5 years for aggravated assault.
He jumped into it, so it was two against one. But that only left two on me, and I had some mad worked up. We licked them. After, Clintock settled for hard words, didn't have much else, as a couple of the gut punches Cal landed had Clintock puking like a sick dog. I'm saying, if he could find a way to beat Cal down, even if it's steering you into thinking he'd kill a woman, he'd do just that.
Peace said. Chase sat again. Tate sat silent a moment, studying his little book.
I appreciate the information. All right, then. Bo.
Tate turned back to her.
What happened next?
Cal called you, and I called our security, as I had my wits about me again, so they could block off the road and keep anybody from coming along. Clintock got there first, and it was clear he wanted to push Callan, so she blew out a breath. I said how I needed to sit, have some water, and I'd arrange for the office to send down the keys for the near cabin. I wasn't in the mood to have the two of them snapping at each other with Billie Jean lying over there.
That was a smart way to handle it. I've got some details to get yet, and I need to talk to Billie Jean's direct supervisor and whoever was working with her last night.
That'd be Drew Mathers. I've talked to him and the bar staff. You'll need to do that too, but I can tell you, Billie Jean sent the others home about 12:30. She had three couples still in the bar. Four of them came in as friends, and the other couple got friendly, so they stayed on. I can't tell you for sure what time she closed down and left, but I can give you the names of the people who were in the bar after 12:30.
That would be mighty helpful. She had a boyfriend, didn't she?
They broke up a couple of weeks ago. Chad Ammon. He's one of our drivers, doubles as bell staff. He's off today.
Is that Stu Ammon's boy?
It is.
And would you know who did the breaking?
She did. He cheated on her with a girl out of Missoula, and a girl from Milltown before that, so she showed him the door. I want to say, and I know you'll need to talk to him too, Chad is absolutely slippery when it comes to women, but there's not a mean bone in his body. And he was about as upset about getting the boot as he'd have been nicking himself shaving. Just something that happens.
Was she seeing anyone else?
She was, how'd she put it? Taking a breather from, she glanced at the grannies, a certain anatomical part. I saw her almost every day, and she'd have told me if she'd shifted her mind on that.
All right, then. I appreciate you laying all that out for me, Bo.
After tucking his book in his pocket, Tate got to his feet.
That was fine coffee, Mrs. Bodine. I'm going to leave you all alone.
Are you going over now? Bodine asked him.
I am.
If I could go over with you, I can get the people you need to talk to, set up a place for you to do that.
That'd be helpful.
He waited for her while she got her coat. She glanced back at her family. Nothing more to say for now, she thought, and went outside with Tate.
I know you can't say what you can't say, she began. But it's clear somebody went after her. I don't know why she stopped where she did, how it happened. But it's clear she was scared enough to run. And that means she was running from something. Someone.
There's more to do before I can say whether or not that's the case. Officially.
I'm asking if I should put on more security.
I don't know that that's necessary, but when something like this happens, people are going to be spooked until the answers come out.
I think you should do whatever you feels right.
A woman she knew was dead, and on her land, Bodine thought. She wished she knew what felt right. As he loaded a docile mare into a trailer, Callan spotted the sheriff's truck heading down the road toward the BAC. He'd been expecting it. He lifted the trailer gate behind the pair of horses, stepped toward the shelter where Easy LaFoy was grooming another horse.
"Going to put you to work later," Easy told the gelding. "So you get your lazing around in now. Easy, I'm going to need you to take these horses down to the center. We got a lesson in about an hour. Maddie's going straight there for it." "I ain't finished here, boss." "It's all right. I'll see to it. You get these two down there. Saddle them up. Just say to Maddie that she's to remember the rules. You can take your lunch while the lesson's going on."
"Okay, boss."
He stepped out of the shelter with Callan as Tate pulled up.
"I guess he's here about what happened to that girl. Awful thing to happen."
"Yeah. You go ahead."
And Callan walked over to meet Tate.
"Cal?"
Tate nodded.
"How's your mom doing?"
"She's doing fine. She likes having a grandkid right under her feet to spoil."
"I got one coming myself."
"I didn't know that."
"Yeah, first one, due in May. My wife's half crazy already buying those onesies and teddy bears."
Tate paused, watched Easy maneuver the truck and trailer.
"That a new hand?"
"He is, but then so am I." "Not the welcome back anybody'd want. How about you go over it for me?"
"Can we talk while I work? We've got a 6-person trail ride coming up this afternoon."
"We can sure do that."
He walked with Cal to the shelter and the horses, and Callan picked up where Easy had left off. As he worked, Callan relayed everything from meeting Bodine in the stables to finding the body.
"You rode up Whitetail Trail?"
"Yeah. This weather, it's like riding through a movie. Picture perfect."
"You'd know about that. Movies."
"I guess."
"Have you had a drink in the saloon here since you've been back?"
"Nope. I've been busy. And I've got beer back at the ranch. I'd never met the woman. And would never forget her.
I can't prove I didn't decide to drive over this way in the middle of the night and go after some woman I'd never met. But it sure would be a change in habit for me."
Despite the circumstances, Tate's lips curved a little.
"You got in some tussles here and there, as I recall.
With boys and men,"
Callan agreed easily, even though he heard Clintock's influence in the line of questioning.
"The kind of tussling I did with girls and women? That's of a different nature, and always by mutual agreement."
"I've never heard otherwise."
Tate gestured to Callan's eye.
"Looks like you've had a recent tussle. That's a decent black eye you're sporting."
"I've had better. Bodine, she just wanted to get to her friend. She couldn't think outside of that, and I couldn't let her. So, yeah, you could say we tussled and she caught me. She's got an admirable right hook."
"This how you told it all to my deputy?"
"I did."
Tate waited a beat. Another.
"Don't want to add to it?"
"There's nothing to add."
"I've got a story to tell you."
Tate dug a pack of gum out of his pocket.
"The wife nagged me until I quit smoking."
He offered the pack, and Callan took a stick out.
"Anyway, I was saying, there was a poker game one night over at the Clintock spread. The missus was visiting her sister, took the little girl along, so it was just Bud Clintock and young Garrett at home. He'd have been about 12, I guess, at that time. Your dad was there."
Callan's eyes stayed flat gray as he nodded.
"He usually was if there was a poker game.
Or a horse race. Or a sporting event to bet on.
That's a fact. Though he had his stretches where he held that devil down. But this wasn't one of those stretches. It's not speaking ill of the dead to say Jack Skinner had a weakness, but there wasn't mean in him. That night he was having a run of luck, raking it in. Lots of drinking going on, a lot of swearing and betting and smoking, which I dearly miss.
Tate sighed, chewed his gum.
Last pot. It came down to your dad and Garrett's. Now, Bud had been losing almost as much as yours had been winning that night. This was a rich pot, and Bud, he kept raising. Jack, he kept raising right back. About $500 in there when Bud ran out of money. He says he'd put something else in. Your dad, half-joking, says he could put the pup in. This dog, no more than a 4-month-old pup, had taken to Jack. Jack said the pup was his lucky charm, and Bud says that's fine, and they laid the cards down. Bud, he had a heart flush 8 through queen, and Jack, 4 deuces.
Pausing, Tate shoved back his hat, shook his head.
4 deuces. And that was that. Jack took the pot, but he wouldn't take the pup. That pup belonged to the boy, and there was no meanness in Jack. He said he'd rather Bud buy him a steak dinner, and that's where they left it. Everybody went home, a little drunk and lighter in the pocket, but for Jack, and myself, as I broke even, and that was as good as a win under the circumstances.
Tate looked away toward the mountains, then straight into Callan's eyes.
I heard how somebody shot that pup dead the very next day. Now, Bud, he can be a hard man, but he'd never have put a bullet in a pup.
Callan could see it, had seen that mean in Clintock even back when they were 12.
Why did you take him on as deputy sheriff? He served his country, and he came back home. I figured, from what I could see, Garrett had outgrown that streak of mean. I'm not saying he can't ride the line now and then, but I can't say I've had cause to complain about him either. But him and me? We'll be having a talk, because a woman's dead, and nobody who works for me is going to use that to satisfy an old grudge. I've got no issue with him. If he stays out of my way, I'll stay out of his. That's how we'll keep it. You give your mother my best when you talk to her next.
I will. Alone with the horses, Callan gave some thought to bitter young boys. He'd been one. And to a father who'd never been mean, but weak enough to lose everything, including his son's respect. In her office, Odine pushed through the steps, handling the work that couldn't be put off, but stopping everything whenever one of the resort crew came in for comfort or with questions. She worked through it with a fist in the pit of her stomach and a headache brewing behind her eyes. Jessica paused in the doorway, tapped her knuckles on the door jamb.
I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, it's okay. I was going to come get you in a bit anyway. Saves me the steps. Have you eaten anything? What? Momentarily blank, Bodine rubbed at her stiff neck. That's what I thought. Taking charge, Jessica simply picked up the phone on Bodine's desk, pushed the extension for the kitchen. Hi, Carlene. It's Jessica. Would you send a bowl of the soup of the day and some chamomile tea down to Beau's office? Yeah, that'd be nice. Thanks. What if I don't want soup? Bodine said when Jessica hung up. You'll eat it because you're smart enough to know you need it, the same as Rory is, and your mother. Bodine worked up a smile. Are you taking care of us? Somebody has to. You look worn out, and I happen to know there's been a steady procession of people coming in here today looking to lean on you, like there's been in Rory's office and Maureen's, but more streamed in here. Big boss. That's right. They need you for comfort, so you need soup.
Now tell me what I can do to help.
I've been working on a couple of things, and...
Didn't you have a consult on the Rotor Company's conference set for right about now? And an interview today?
I rescheduled them.
It wasn't a problem.
We've had a death in the family.
Now Bodine's aching eyes burned with tears. As she pressed her fingers against them, Jessica turned back, shut the door.
I'm so sorry, Bodine. I didn't know Billie Jean very well, but I liked her. Let me take some of this off your hands. I know Sal generally picks up your slack when you need it, but she's a wreck right now.
They were really good friends. I could use your help with a couple things. And I know you've got plenty on your hands right now, too.
Chelsea's every bit as good as you and I thought she'd be. Adding her to my teams freed me up enough I can take some time.
I can fill it. First, I've written up a statement for the press. I've already had to use it twice with reporters who called about what happened. I want to make sure it hits the right notes.
I'd be happy to look at it.
We need one for guests, too. Those who are here, those who are booked and might contact us about this. I've got that drafted up.
You didn't know her very well, Odine added, so you'll be more objective. I'm not sure I haven't gone too far toward the brisk and brief because she was my friend and I'm overcompensating.
All right.
And finally, we need to hold a memorial for her. Here. I spoke with her mother already.
Bodine paused, blew out a breath.
We offered them cabins here, and drivers, whatever they need, but they're going to stay in Missoula, and they're going to take her back to Helena, back home, when they can. The memorial will be for all of us. All of us. Resort and ranch and anyone around who knew her and wants to come pay respects.
Let me take that.
I'm not being flippant when I say a memorial's an event, and events are my area.
You just tell me when you want to have it and where on the property, and I'll put it together.
Grateful, Bodine let that weight slide away.
I think it has to be indoors, as we can't trust the weather. The mill's the best place.
I agree.
Jessica rose at the knock on the door, opened it.
Thanks, Carlene, that's just perfect.
She brought the tray to the desk, set it down.
Eat.
Stomachs and knots.
Eat anyway.
On a weak laugh, Bodine picked up the soup spoon.
You sound like my Grammy.
A towering compliment.
Give me a general idea of what you want, and I'll work the details.
Flowers, because Billie Jean had loved them, and country western music. As she sketched it out, Bodine ate. The soup had been a good choice, as it sort of slid right in and down without much thought.
I think we need to have it open for 4 or 5 hours, with someone from the family there.
We can work that out, Bodine said.
But I'd want to give everyone who works here a chance to come in, spend a little time, and there's no day coming without bookings. I thought about shutting down for a day.
Jessica, still taking notes, didn't bother to glance up.
Then you thought about ruining the plans of people who'd not only booked a cabin, but maybe airfare, taken off work.
It wouldn't be right. But everyone needs to have the chance to come in. It'd be easier to do at the ranch, but
she was resort family.
I can't get it straight in my head.
Though her throat clogged, Bodine pushed the words through.
I can't get that this could happen straight in my head. It's not that we never have trouble, a guest getting a little out of hand, or staff getting bitchy with each other, or even some tussles at an event. But something like this, I can't get it straight in my head.
Bo? Sorry.
Rory came to the door.
Mom needs a minute, if you've got it.
Sure. I'll be right there. Jesse, maybe you can just use my desk? Go over those statements?
That'll be something, Don.
Bodine brought them up on the computer.
Rose, I'll be back in a minute.
Jessica took the desk chair, read over the statements.
Straightforward,
but maybe just a little too brisk, maybe just a little forced. She shifted to the keyboard, began to type suggestions.
Oh, I want to...